Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Mark Abadi, who is the author of Evolve, a book on many things, the how we evolve our nature, and great advice for anybody who's on planet Earth at this time. We are talking with Mark. I believe, Mark, are you calling from England? Is that right?
I am. Yes, I'm in London, in England.
Ah, what time is it there now?
It is 5 p.m., so it's nice blended time for me, just before dinner.
That's great. That's great. Well, thanks for joining us today. I wanted to have you introduce yourself to our audience and talk a little bit about what guided you to write Evolve.
Sure, yeah. It's always a tough one, actually labeling what I am. My background's in psychology, so I'm a holistic psychologist. But I fell into the realms of trying to explain how energy and information moves from one person to the other. So, for example, how you know someone's looking at you, Rupert Sheldrake's morphogenic field type of stuff. So I moved into the physics realm of explaining body physics and biophysics. And so now I blend psychology with biophysics, and I teach that all over the world. And also I see clients individually for my therapy, which I've created a blended therapy called Psychopressure, and I teach meditation. So I'm a kind of an all-rounder. My aim is really to help people live a more balanced and, if you like, evolved lifestyle where they can live in acceptance of themselves and move forwards. What inspired me to write the book is I really wanted to create a handbook for people to, especially for those people who have not really come across any of these terms before, any of the blended understanding where science meets spirituality. And I know you do a lot of that on your show, how you blend things together. And really, that's the holistic nature of being. It's the only way to really be is add everything together, put it into a big blender, and drink the juice at the end.
That's true.
I wrote the book as a kind of very simple yet complicated. I've sort of embedded all these keys of wisdom inside what I wanted to make a very easy, accessible book. And a lot of people I come across, they say, I don't read, I can't read. And the lucky thing is I wrote this book for people who can't read, who don't read, people who don't enjoy particularly reading. So it's lighthearted. At the same time, it has these keys of expanding consciousness embedded within the stories inside it.
Well, I wanted to read the subtitle to our audience. It's Evolve, Living in Balance and Self-Acceptance Through Science, Spirituality, Mindfulness, and Nutrition. And I think the thing I like best about the book is its holistic approach. If any one system is out of balance, your physical, there's a quote from Linus Pauling about the importance of mineral balance, which is really true.
Yes.
If you're lacking in certain minerals, like selenium, you can be more prone to cancer as well as heart disease. So that's just one example. But many of our disbalances are actually in the emotional and mental realm, and you would know this from your study of psychology, that many physical illnesses actually have their basis in emotional and sometimes even mental disruptions and problems in the way we think about ourselves and others. And in fact, your book starts out with a very important concept of self-love, that if we don't love ourselves and accept ourselves, we have filters that distort everything from the get-go. And I think that's a very good place to start, too, is the importance of these filters that we create.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. A lot of people think that going back to the whole idea that the mind is connected to the body, the mind, the emotions are connected to the body. We are a holistic set of vehicles that work together to create this output that's us. And if you have a a mental emotional injury, it will weaken certain parts of your body, which will stop you absorbing nutrition as well. If you're not putting the nutrition into your body, of course you can't get it anyway. But let's assume you're putting the nutrition into your body and you have mental emotional blocks, they're going to stop you absorbing certain things. And so it works both ways. You could have a physical injury. For example, you could be hit by a vehicle and suffer a physical injury. And mentally and emotionally, you're still holding on to the trauma, even though the body has healed itself. And so you can still experience pain and suffering because you've not accepted the movement that's happened inside your system and evolved from it. So it is fully integrated. The mind is connected to the body and the emotional system and vice versa.
Yeah, I think it's also, you talk later on in the book about the chakra system, which is more of an energetic system that actually evolves into the spiritual. I think not only are we connected physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually, but I think that goes on out and can even explain some of the disruptions that occur karmically. I think, for example, I've seen this in people I know who constantly steal from others or constantly are untruthful. I've observed that they are stolen from and they are lied to by others. You know, whatever the defect is,
yeah,
it attracts back to them. So, you know, it's not just even our individual selves that is involved in this system. It actually reaches out and then attracts people to us or situations to us so that we may, on the outside, view what we are putting out. In other words, being the brunt of it, then we can recognize that maybe we should quit doing it to others.
I mean, we're all familiar with now The Secret, popularized the ideas of kind of manifesting your future. And I have an interesting take on karma. For me, karma is just simply physics. It's the physics of attraction and repulsion. And it's the energetic principle that we are all intrinsically linked. And, you know, a lot of people go around saying, yeah, we're all one. We're all one, aren't we? But we actually are. As above, so below. We are cogs in the wheel of the chaotic nature of the universe. Not to bring it down to a mechanical perspective, but we are all linked. And this is why you have experiments on the planet at the moment where if they put rats in a certain type of maze, a certain species of rat, and these rats get better at this maze test, then all the rats on the planet of that species get better at that maze. This is the kind of 100 monkey effect. We are all intrinsically linked. So, you know, if you want to change the world, the first step, it's Michael Jackson man in the mirror job. The first step is to look at yourself and make the evolution in yourself. And if you can raise your consciousness, if you can meditate for a little bit a day, if you can do yourself some yoga and connect with your inner peace, you are literally doing your job to raise the consciousness of the planet without even stepping out of your house.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I think that people who do a regular spiritual practice, and in my experience, it doesn't really matter what practice it is, and I love your advice that later in the book, which is, you know, use your own intuition to choose what to do, you know, because we're not all able to do the same thing. I mean, some people can meditate. Other people really can't meditate. You know, they ought to do yoga or some other Tai Chi or some other Qigong spiritual practice. It doesn't really matter. The point is to get your mind to a place where you can start receiving signals rather than not receiving them. And if you can receive signals and you can receive energy from higher dimensional things that are already in place, you don't have to put them in place. You just have to get your mind to a point where you can actually tap into it. Then all of a sudden you're not taking from everybody around you. You're bringing energy in directly, and you can actually add something to the world, you know, rather than just take things.
Yeah, very much. I mean, you mentioned before about people taking things and getting things in return, and what goes around comes around. For me, I see the world entirely as a state of duality. There are always two things. We only know something is something because it's not something else. For example, we only know what hot is because there is cold. If there was just one temperature in the entire universe, we would have no perspective of hot and cold. And from that sense, in terms of the mind doing the work, that you have to get your mind to a certain place. People think this. They have to get their mind to a certain place. They have to stop it thinking. I don't believe it's actually that complicated. I think it's a lot more simple. And the simplicity, I think, is the alignment between your heart and your mind, or your emotions and your logical system, or your yin and your yang, if you want to take it like that. And in the same sense, it comes back to what you were saying about people who lie all the time. People who lie are inconsistent with their energetic system, so they are outputting something that is that they know is in conflict with their own energy system. So it's creating a conflict. For me, the spiritual practices, the meditation, the yogas, the tai chis, I see them all as meditative practices. But the key is to align your mental system with your emotional system. And then, as you said, the magic just occurs. You have to do absolutely no work. It's not about sitting there going, oh, I'm really trying effortlessly to squeeze out consciousness. Consciousness is embedded through us, and it's the sea within which we all exist. We don't need to do anything to access it. We just need to accept the moment and breathe, and then we're there yet again and again.
And, and the really amazing thing is that you go from a state where you are seeking happiness in the external world, which might be, you know, in your own mind, if you had a certain job or a certain relationship or enough money, you would be happy. Suddenly, when you're able to do this within, you're happy even if you're having money trouble, relationship problems.
Exactly.
If things are falling apart all around you, you look at everything and you just go, oh my, isn't that interesting? You know?
Yeah,
and then actually, because you're plugged in, the answers, the solutions, and the information that you need to fix external problems comes to you naturally. You know, you read the signs.
And the irony is,
wrong.
And the irony, of course, is that even the problems themselves are perfect.
And
this is a kind of an annoying thing that some spiritualists say, that you're already perfect, you just don't know it. It's true, you are. And when you connect to that spirituality, to that oneness, to that that zone inside yourself that doesn't need reconfirmation by anyone else, you don't need to go and ask someone, hey, have I got it? You know when you touch it, because, and for me, this is what's created all religion. What's created all of religion is the people touching spirit, touching the oneness, touching the divinity, which some people call God, some people call the universe, divine, whatever you want to call it. When you touch that spirit, you don't need external confirmation. You don't need to go around asking people, is it right? Is it right? You know in your being, and some people call that soul, you know in your internal consciousness that there is a divinity to the universe. And some people get scared and they come back into their human vehicle, their little personality, and they go, oh God, what was that? Oh, it must be God. I'm not worthy. I'm not big enough. And you're not big enough, but the other part of you behind your personality is that same one thing that you touched. And that's why I say everyone's God. You are it. There's no need to label and what I call anthropomorphize God. You don't need to give God a personality and a consciousness, because you are that divine. And every single person on the planet can touch that and touch it. This is where words become limited. You don't touch it. You don't experience it. You just are it. You just be it. And that's through the practice of stillness. However you achieve your stillness, whether it's mopping the floor or meditating or doing yoga, everyone can achieve that stillness. And that's really what the book's about, is helping people to become aware of the unconscious processes that are stopping them being still, that are keeping them moving and, you know, it's like if you look at something straight ahead of you, and then you turn your head fast from the left to the right, from the left to the right, left to the right, the thing that you were looking at in the center becomes blurred. You miss it. Even though your eyes pass by it, because your consciousness lags behind, it just all blurs into one, and you see nothing. And most people are just going through their lives without stopping and being still. If you like, they're trying to get to the end of the journey. They're trying to get to their goal of money, of children, of, you know, partners, of whatever goal they're trying to get to, and they forget that it's about the journey. I heard a great comparison to life and music by Alan Watts. And Alan's got some great stuff. He's got some brilliant lectures he gives. And, you know, if life was about how quickly you get to the end, then music would just be 100 miles an hour. It would just be, and you'd just have the crescendo at the end. And then it would go, yes, brilliant, applause. But it's not. Music is about the journey. It's about smelling the flowers. It's about realizing that there's the now. There's only the now. The past is our memory of the now, and the future is our fear of the now. But fundamentally, there's just this moment. And if people got that just for a split second, all these problems on the planet, like we're seeing in Egypt and we're seeing in all the Middle East, all these eruptions, these wars, they wouldn't occur because people would realize that there's just the now, and there's no need to fear and lead ourselves into attacking other parts of ourselves, other people.
That's true. You start the book with the concept of you have to love yourself.
Yes.
Would you like to explain
why
this is so important?
Yeah, you know, love is one of those words that's been taken by mostly English poets and, you know, Shakespeare and blown out into this concept that of like some deep emotional thing. Love for me is about acceptance. You can still love something unconditionally and still dislike it at the same time. And that's why I tell my clients, love the shit that happens in your life. Love the things that happen in your life that you don't like, because that is your way. And it's not, you know, when you say yes, well, let's say, oh, my father got ill and passed away. Let's say that happened. Then you can't, what are you going to say? You love that. The love that we're talking about there is acceptance. And really, when you say love yourself, it's accept yourself. Accept who you are. Accept two fundamental things. And the first one is that you will never be reproduced. Ever. Since the dawn of time till the end of time, there will never be another you. You are entirely and completely unique. As such, like Oscar Wilde says, be yourself because everyone else is taken. The point of the matter
is
that, yeah, I love that saying. The point of the matter is that you are unique. As such, everything you do is your perfect output. The universe has designed you. If you sit and go, oh, I shouldn't have done that, that shouldn't have happened, then what are you saying? That the universe made a mistake? Or that God made a mistake? Something happened that wasn't supposed to happen? You're a unique creature, and all you need to do, you've got one job, and this is the second point, you've got one job being this unique creature that is you, and that is just be you. And no one else can do it, and no one else can tell you how to be you. Only you can say who you are. And that's why idea of following, you know, sets of rules and religions and, you know, belief systems, it's like you are the marker upon which your life is based. And you have all the tools you need, and you are the perfect manifestation of you. And that's what people mean when they say you're perfect right now. You are. You're perfectly you. And you can't be any more perfectly you now. To when you were born, to when you die, you will be perfectly you all the way.
And if you are able to develop a system, and it doesn't really matter what it is, like I said before, a system of communication with the higher aspect of you, constant communication if possible, then what you have is a guidance system that will set you on a path that will be perfect. It'll be perfect anyway, but you will
exactly.
be communicating better with that higher
yeah.
aspect of you, so that you understand why things are happening, and
yes.
you won't be so much in the dark and surprised by things.
Yeah,
in other words, you'll
be
get
enjoying
information.
Life.
Right, you'll get information about why certain things had to happen and how
yes.
it all is perfect, and you
yes.
won't have to wait till life review to figure it out. So it's
yeah.
a little more.
I mean, but this is that's the key. I mean, you mentioned it in your mm-hmm. point that it's perfect anyway, whether you
it's
do any of this
anyway.
Stuff or not. Yeah, it's just you're going to enjoy the perfection a lot more
exactly.
if you bring your awareness
understand
to
it. Right.
the origin, the spirit, the oneness, the,
right.
whatever you want to call it. And for me, the best way to do that is sincerity. Now,
mm-hmm.
to sin means to miss the point, which I think is
right.
ironic with regards to religion. But to sin means to miss the point. So sincerity
mm-hmm.
is to be right on the point, to be authentic.
Right.
And if you can be authentic, and this comes back to people who lie
mm-hmm.
are being inauthentic. And so their right. energy system that outputs who they really are
mm-hmm.
conflicts with who they output verbally, who they say they are.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so this insincerity happens in their system, and they become in conflict with nature, because nature is fully
mm-hmm.
sincere, fully authentic. It is
mm-hmm.
fully accepting, fully unconditional. Nature doesn't care whether this tree grows here or that tree grows here, or this animal lives or that animal dies. It's nature and accepting. And if we can mimic nature, I mean, all our technology that we produce, computers and nanobots, everything is copied rather poorly from nature.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same sense, if we can copy our consciousness from the consciousness of nature, that self-acceptance becomes embedded in every cell in our body. And that's one of my other focuses is on energy medicine, which is how the cellular system of the body communicates with the rest of the universe electromagnetically and through different quantum fields. I'm sure we'll get onto that in this talk.
Yeah, and the example you used before, if somebody is not authentic, if someone is untruthful or engaging in what we call sin, which is an ancient Aramaic term for an archery term to miss the mark specifically,
yeah.
Then what happens is you disrupt your energy body, and when you disrupt your energy body, you can get some pretty interesting, even potentially life-threatening physical illnesses like bleeding ulcers or, you know, things that occur very quickly because you have, through dishonesty and untruthfulness, completely screwed up your own energy. In other words,
yeah.
you have a blockage, and because you have a blockage, the energy in the stomach lowers, therefore H. pylori, the bacteria,
yeah.
takes hold, therefore the ulcers form, therefore it roads into an artery. I'm a surgeon, so I have to operate on people
sure.
with this. You know, they're
sure.
very sick. And then you have a life-threatening situation that would not have existed had you not disrupted your own energy system.
Yeah.
So we need to educate people about this. This needs to
yeah.
be started in grade school.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I think one
yeah.
of the important things to point out here is that the majority of people who are being inauthentic, they're not doing it on purpose. It's not their
right.
fault. They've learned a set of fear patterns which
mm-hmm.
have, if you like, conditioned them to avoid certain things or to be scared and to live in fear. And our governments and our societies, you know, UK and America and most of the world, it doesn't encourage you to be fearless. It encourages you to
mm-hmm.
be full of fear. If you just look at the
right.
standard programs on TV, they're all based upon fear. If you look at the news, it's all based upon fear, propaganda, trying to get you
mm-hmm.
into a state of fight or flight, which of course exists at the solar plexus, where your breath happens, which is why most people in anxiety and fear hold their breath. And you see it when people are communicating, just when you meet new people, watch them and watch if they're holding their breath, if they pierce their lips, if they hold themselves back. They are probably being inauthentic, but not because they're nasty and they're horrible, just because they are scared. And this is another beautiful thing when you touch the divinity, when you allow yourself, when you surrender inwards and you allow yourself to experience, you realize there is nothing to fear. Absolutely nothing. The world could be about to have an atomic bomb dropped on every location. It still wouldn't be something to fear. It's just that acceptance of the universe. And that doesn't mean you sit on the couch and eat potato chips. It means that you are free somewhere. You're freed from living in fear and thus living inauthentically, which leads to all these conditions you spoke about. And thus you are more healthy and more vibrant, more alive, and you don't cause problems for yourself by being inauthentic and by living in fear. People live in fear and then they create their own problems that they fear. You know, what you resist persists. And the resistance comes from fear. So anything you fear will become clear and it will come back at you. You'll create it, you know, just like The Secret, just like karma. You'll create that very thing that you're focusing upon.
You write about this in the chapter called The Signals We Send, the body language. Now, what there was, I read somewhere that a large percentage of our communication is nonverbal. Can you explain that? How only
very little
of our communication is actually verbal?
Yes. I mean, generally in psychology, it's understood a good 70 to 80% of our communication is nonverbal. And there are experiments that show that communication itself and the interpretation of the words that are about to be said happens before the words actually come out of the mouth. But there's something else. Traditional psychologists, traditional biologists don't understand that this very tiny, subtle quantum world has an enormous effect on our consciousness. Because what they say is, oh, these fields, these, say, magnetic fields coming from the body, they're far too small to have an effect. But what we see now in biophysics and epigenetics is that these very tiny fields can have massive effects. So put it this way, every thought you have is an electrical signal in your brain. And any electrical signal that passes through any coil, any wire, produces a magnetic field. It's a law of physics. Ampere's law of induction is called. So we know this for a fact. Everyone accepts these general. I mean, facts are there to be disputed. You know, the world is flat. But generally, it's accepted by both quantum physicists and normal physicists that Ampere's law exists. So any electrical signal you have, i.e. any thought you have, creates a subsequent identical magnetic field to the thought. That magnetic field leaves the body as if the body wasn't even there and comes out into the world. Now, subsequently, the human body itself has a set of systems which, you know, without getting too complex, people can read the book to get more detail of that. But without getting too complex, there's another couple of laws of physics. One is Faraday's law of induction, which says that any magnetic field that comes near a coil will induce an electrical signal. And our body is full of spirals, full of coils. The collagen fiber, the connective tissue, the most abundant material in all living matter, is itself spiral. The muscle system is spiral. The blood vessels spiral around. So all these spiral systems in the body are literally designed to detect these minute magnetic fields coming out of other people, coming out of plants, of trees, of nature. There are millions of these fields all over the place. So our system is designed to emit signals and detect signals. So here, you're having a conversation with somebody, and you're having that conversation, and you think, God, this guy's boring. But yet you smile and nod and go, oh, that's interesting. That's firstly being insincere. Now, this person who you're thinking, God, they're boring, they're somewhere, subconsciously in their body system detecting the signal that came from your system that thought they're boring. So be careful what you think, because if you are saying something that's incompatible, that's in conflict with what you really think, then there's going to be conflict somewhere in your system and in the person you're talking to. So that's where it goes into more of the quantum field of nonverbal communication, whereby what you think has an enormous effect on the world around you. And that's what we're starting to see in quantum biophysics. And Nobel Prizes are won for these sort of things, where they show that microcurrents, tiny, tiny fields, have these cascade effects in the biological system. You know, biologists are so gross in their analysis of the body. I mean, you know, even when they're doing microsurgery on whatever, you know, small parts of the body system, they're still so closed off. And I think it's great that what you're doing, because you're a surgeon and you have come to what many surgeons would call the dark side, because you've opened yourself up to understanding that there is more to the world than what you were taught at medical school. There's more to the world than just the gross biological system. And of course, you know all about Albert Svenjorgi, who was the first person to contract a muscle in a petri dish. And he is the teacher of one of my teachers, James Oshman, who is a fantastic biologist or biophysicist who looks at how information moves from outside all the way into the DNA of the cell, all the way through the collagen fibers, the connective tissues, through these electromagnetic systems. So,
yeah, I've interviewed Dr. Oshman several times. He's great.
Right. He's a very good friend of mine, and I'm proud to say one of my favorite teachers. You know, he really moved a lot of consciousness for me in terms of the physics of the biological system.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I do in my book is I try to make that much more digestible to the non-scientist. Because for me, there's far more non-scientists on the planet than there are scientists. And I'm an artist as well, you know. I'm a meditator, and that's an art. And I like to try and... One of the keys I think that I have is I can take lots of different fields and blend them together and explain it to my granny. And
there you go. That's great.
I think that's the key. You know, if you can't, I think it was Einstein who said, if you can't explain it simply enough, you don't understand it well enough.
That's true. That's very true.
And I think that's the point. So the nonverbal communication, we are doing that constantly. And it's all subconscious because if it was conscious, we would just be sat there completely overloaded with the amount of data. We are only conscious of about 1% of the information our body actually detects. So there's about 11 million bits of information detected by the body every second. We're actually conscious of about 90 or 60 bits of information. So who's listening to the other 10,999,940 bits of information every second? That's our subconscious, our body system, or as James Oshman, you know, makes the difference between the subconscious being the connective tissue and the analog system of the body, and the digital system, the neurological system of the body. Most biologists are just looking at the neurological system, but that's not the main system. The main system is, I believe, the collagen, the connective tissue, which there's a reason why it's the most abundant material in all living matter, because it has these properties that can detect and translate information, signals, into real data, just like a radio picks up radio waves. We're a massive antenna picking up all these signals.
Well, in your book, you point out that men are more logical-based, left-brain-based, and women more intuitive. And so if you're, I see if I get this right, you say, remember this, if you're going to lie to your wife, but better yet, if don't do it to her face, do it over the telephone, and better yet, just write her a letter.
Yes.
And so you're backing, back.
I mean, it's not that men are more intuitive, but women have different skills to men. I mean, you know, it is proper men are from Mars, women from Venus. We have different skills. One of my theses I wrote was Girls Gossip, Men Map Read. And it was looking at the spatial and verbal reasoning skills differences between men and women.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, women are experts at micro movement analysis in the face. So mm-hmm. That's why I think, you know, women should literally be in charge of anywhere where there are liars, which is most of government. And you know, I think if we had that, the world would be a far better place. But yeah, you know, we process things differently, but I don't believe that everything is fixed. I think, you know, you can have, it's not the case, for example, that every man in the world can run faster than every woman in the world. But if you took an average, men would run faster than women because we have bigger muscles in certain places. And it's the same for our mental emotional system. Men are more designed to be the hunters, the shooters, the scorers, the masculine side of energy, which is why we evolved that way. You know, we were out hunting because we're physically stronger and we are more resistant. And the women are more designed for language and communication skills. That's why they were at home creating the society and language. And so, you know, we have to be aware that we are primed as men and women to be evolutionarily a certain way. That doesn't mean we're stuck. It just means that generally that's the case.
True. Now, under happiness habits, you've made a number of observations that I think are very good. And I like this phrase. The idea that you could have done something better is the thing underlying the essence of guilt. Would you like to elaborate on that?
This is one of my favorite things. I was just explaining it last night to somebody, actually. Yeah, so the idea of guilt is, I think, one of the biggest problems in society and in people's heads. I'm guilty. I should have done something better. So the idea of guilt is that you should have or could have done something better. You should have known something. You should have thought more. You should have done something different. Now, I ask this question, because there are these people who go around saying these things. Oh, it shouldn't have happened that way. Well, I ask, if it shouldn't have happened, how did it happen? Did the universe make a mistake? Did God make a mistake? No, it happened because it was supposed to happen. That's the first point. The second point is, I ask the question to my clients of this. When you come to a life decision, anything, it could be what packet of crisps to eat. It doesn't matter how minor it is. But when you come to a life decision, what you do is you weigh up all the pros and cons, given all the tools you've got at that time, at that moment, all the skills you've got, all the knowledge, you call upon all the knowledge, everything in your biological system, and you ask yourself, which is the best choice? You never ask yourself, which is the worst choice? You never find the best choice and then go, oh, I'll take the shitter one. You never do that. You always do what you think is best. And this one really riles people. I even say, you know, I say, Hitler did the best he could with the tools he had. He thought he was doing a good job. He thought he was doing, even the mass murderers, they all think they're doing a good job. Now, this isn't to justify them and say, oh, well, are you going to excuse everyone? No, no. People have to be held responsible, and we have to have a system of living. And, you know, it's just tough luck if you thought killing lots of people was the best idea, because you're going to get punished for that. You know, it's just tough luck you happen to be dealt those cards. But here's the point about guilt. Guilt is that idea that you could have done something different. And I argue the opposite. I say you couldn't have done anything different. Given those same set of circumstances, given the tools you had at the time, you tried your best. Everyone gets an A star for effort. And it's only in hindsight that you can look back and go, oh, now I've got this new tool. God, I wish I had done that. I should have done that. And that's okay. It's okay to take a lesson, but the idea of guilt is this deep regret that you could have done something different. You couldn't have. You did the best you could. A star for effort. Right. So if you eradicate guilt, think what's next. If there's no guilt, how do you feel? If there is nothing to be guilty about, how good do you feel in your life?
And how much better?
That doesn't mean you
sleep?
Go and do bad things.
Right.
It means that you don't have this inbuilt regret or this inbuilt mm-hmm. concept in your head that you are wrong, that what you did was bad, that what you did should have been better. You did your best. And remember, you're perfectly you. So if you're perfectly right. you and you did your best, what more could you have done at that time, given those set of circumstances?
And that leads to self-acceptance.
Yes.
That's really self-acceptance, you know. And that's what I tell people. If you've done the best you can with the knowledge and the skills you had at the time, God doesn't expect anything different.
If you decided,
oh, I'm not going to go to work today, I'm going to stay home and drink wine and watch TV, well, that's probably not the best, and you probably could have done better. You know, I mean, it's there is
something. But if you end up doing that,
effort.
If you end up doing that, you did the best you could. This isn't a justification logic. This isn't a logic for justifying,
right.
you know, bad behaviors or unproductive behaviors. This is a logic for realizing that whatever you end up choosing was all you could choose. You were never going to choose anything else. It's kind of like that understanding from The Little Prince of Muktub, which means it's written.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is as it is. And nothing was ever going to change that. We were always going to be having this conversation at this time, and the stone I'm stepping on right now, I was always going to step on at this point. Since the dawn of time, this was always going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it scares people, because people go, oh, so what, I've no choice. And no, you don't, but at the same time, you do. And this is where the dichotomy and in fundamental the paradox comes in. A paradox is something that is in complete conflict with itself. So this is where you access spirit from. You access God or spirit or the divinity through blending the paradox together. That's why you blend the logic with the emotion and you stay in the moment. Because everything's duality, past, future. When you blend them together, yin and yang, you blend them together. What happens is you are here in the moment, right now. Right now. And that's all there is, this moment. And if there's only this moment and you're living in that state of acceptance, you will perform admirably. You will perform as you've been designed by the universe, as you've been designed by God, whatever word you need. So there's nothing to feel guilty about. You're free. Congratulations, you've won. You've won without having to do anything.
That's great. Well,
I think so.
Would you like to give some of your contact information?
Yeah, that would be great. I'd like to just first thank Eva Herr, Agape Eva Herr, for putting me on to you. She's lovely.
That's
We've
great.
Had some lovely
yeah.
conversations, and just wanted to shout out to her. Yeah, anyone who wants to get my book, it's physical, hardback and softback, and digital, electronic as well. So you can find that book on my website, bookevolve.com. And I see clients. I mean, I'm over here in the UK, but I see clients over Skype and stuff. So if people want to get in touch, my website, you can find me on the bookevolve.com website. Or you go to my home website, which is markabadi.com. And that's ABADI. But, I mean, my real aim is to help people realize, get to the point of realization where they're not overthinking. And they're not overfeeling. They're just being blended. They're just being. And that's the key. And everyone can do this. There's no, oh, I'm not good enough. Oh, I can't do that. That's just society that's programmed you to believe you're useless. You are perfect. And my job is to help you realize that you're perfect. But first, you might have to break a few of those habits and those belief systems that are guarding your belief, that are guarding your personality and your personality issues.
I do want to mention that the book has great information about things involving the importance of sleep, diet, detoxification, all sorts of really, really useful information, the effect of electromagnetic fields on us, all of these, you know, day-to-day things that you may or may not know about that could be affecting your health.
Yeah.
Of course, my interest is more in energy. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. Oh, no, I'm just saying I wanted to make a handbook for people to use, and I'm a big believer in references. So I piled the book full of references because, obviously, if I was to tell people everything, it would be a 25-volume encyclopedia.
Okay.
I wanted it to be a simple book, and I even put cartoons in it. Did you like the cartoons?
Mm-hmm. I did.
I even put the cartoons in it to make it light because I want people to enjoy the process of discovery, and that is the key. It's about joy. It's about being life. We're here to be life. We don't need to have all this drama.
Well, that's true. If we just be honest and accept ourselves and not try to be better than the other group, and that's in one of your psychological experiments and how groups tend to cause a lot. Which group you're in competing with another group can cause a lot of problems.
Yeah, well, it's very tribal. You know, it's embedded in us tribally to compete against one group. But fundamentally, we're at that stage now where we're just evolving onto the next plane, which will be the automation of the workforce, where we won't be all struggling for food and water, assuming the consciousness of the planet will continue rising, which, of course, it's no option but to. And, you know, there are a lot of people who are fighting these big, bad corporations, and that's great. However, you've got to remember that the people in charge of these big, bad corporations, these Monsanto people, they are also part of this collective consciousness. And the best way to fight, as one of my other teachers, Bruce Lee, is one of my favorite people, he says, the art of fighting without fighting. And that is connecting with your spirit, connecting with your own inner self, and sitting in that perfection for as often as you can. As you said, a continual spiritual practice. And it doesn't matter if you're religious or not religious, it's irrelevant. Sitting in that perfection will generate a field of consciousness that the big bad people will also evolve within, and it's a 100 monkey effect. It's like a war for peace. You know, in America you have that whole war for peace thing. I mean, the irony of that is ridiculous. You don't war for peace, you peace for peace.
Right.
And that's the point. That fighting is all very good if the people are bad, you know. I mean, if another Hitler comes up, yeah, we're going to fight them to hold back the evil. But at the same time, the consciousness of the planet is more affected by what you do internally in your being than how many baddies you kill. Because it's like the whole Israel-Palestine thing, you know. They build a big wall and one, you know, the terrorists are firing bombs at Israel, and Israel fire a bomb back and kill a child, and that creates another 20 terrorists because they see a child killed. And so it's like you can't fight your way to peace. You can't swim your way out of the swimming pool. All you can do is be your truth, and that will infect like a virus through the collective consciousness, as Carl Jung says, the collective unconsciousness of human beings, not human doings.
One of my favorite chapters in your book is Energy Medicine, the Future. I think I'd highly recommend people read this because it's you do have that talent of being able to explain things that are fairly complicated and bring it down to where people can understand it, especially even including the cartoons, which are good.
Thank you very much.
So
that's very kind of you to say.
It's a very good chapter. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's definitely my passion because, for me, that will shock the entire system. And once people realize that there are things that aren't physical that can have massive effects, suddenly it opens up the concept in their mind for that the world isn't black and white. It isn't just this chemical and that chemical. It's informational. It's it's alive. You know, it's like a neural net. We are just a neuron in the neural net. You know, as above, so below. If you look at the brain, you know, it's got billions of neurons. One neuron by itself is not particularly smart. But you take 100 billion of them and put them together. It's kind of like the flora bacteria in the gut. I believe that that is the flora bacteria in the gut is a way of creating your gut instinct. That one of these bacteria by themselves, these are friendly bacteria, you know, the things that you want to retake into your body. I believe one of these bacteria, it's not particularly smart, but you put 100 billion of them together and suddenly they create this gut instinct where they're detecting animalistically the electromagnetics of the world, of somebody speaking to you, of what's safe and what's not safe, forming your gut instinct. But as soon as people open up and realize that actually very tiny things can have massive effects, I think they'll let go of this Newtonian solid world principle that everything is a billiard ball, knock-on effect, and the drug companies will lose their massive monopoly on health. And we'll go back to understanding what real wealth is and where the word origins from, which means well-being health. Nothing to do with how much money you've got. It's well-being health.
And, you know, the corporations have to change from within. You know, the class action lawsuits and everything are useful to change them because then maybe they won't repeat those particular behaviors, but it actually has to be the conscience and leadership abilities of the people running the companies that change the direction of the companies. So,
and I have a lot of clients who
would meditate
CEOs
on that. That might help.
Yeah. Yes. But I mean, a lot of these people are waking up themselves. They're doing yoga. They're meditating. Yeah. And that's where the mindfulness meditation comes in. You know, they are accessing it because they don't realize that accessing it is going to change their worldview. And a lot of the time, these people, certainly in the last 20 years, the people who have accessed it from the corporations, what they do is they just do a runner from the corporation. They say, that's it, over. You know, I've been with this corporation for 20 years. I'm making $100,000, $300,000 a year, but I'm going to run and I'm going to retrain as a yoga teacher. And that's what the majority of these people were doing. But now what they're doing is they're staying in their position. And they're changing the consciousness of the culture of the organization from within. And it's like a virus that's going to spread. So I'm very optimistic about the way consciousness is evolving on the planet. And when people say to me, oh, God, it's terrible, the world now, it's terrible. I say it's exactly how it needs to be for the evolution to occur. It's perfect. And we are going towards a utopia,
it's almost like everything, it's true. It's almost like everything is being revealed that is out of divine order. And it is a little upsetting because it's being revealed, but at least it's being revealed because until you become consciously aware of something, you can't do anything to fix it because you don't know it exists. So, you know, the fact
that. Look at the internet.
Yeah.
The internet.
I mean, the internet allows us to get this information everywhere.
Exactly, and that is the start of it, or the next step, the real change.
I am very optimistic.
So I'm excited.
Well.
I'm excited, Susan.
Yeah. And I think it's in every field. Certainly, medicine is going to change, law, government, business, the family unit. Everything is going to restructure, and it'll be much more healthy, much more sustainable, and. It's the only way to solve the problems that we've created with the old system. There was just too much hidden. It had a bad agenda.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's the problems in the old system that's created the consciousness. So actually, I'm thankful to the problems in the old system.
That's right.
Because without that, the consciousness wouldn't have emerged.
That's very true. Everything's always perfect.
It is. It makes. And then I have people who ask me the question, so what am I doing here in your workshop? Or no, then I don't need to come and see you as a for therapy then. And I say, no, you don't. You don't. You're perfect. But you might not realize that. And so that's why you read the book. You know, it's, these most self-help books are telling you how to be. My book is not about telling you how to be. It's telling you, it's giving you options to accept and then the knowledge to choose what you choose to be in acceptance fully anyway. Mm-hmm. So you accept and then you say, oh, I accept this. Now I choose this.
Well, I want to read your final word. The final word that Mark gives you in his book is, you are complete and perfectly you, as you are right now. Embrace this gift of life and realize you can't be duplicated or reproduced. Within you breathe the essence of the universe alive and realize your internal connection. That's beautiful.
Thank you. You spoiled the punchline, though.
What was it?
By reading the end of the book, no, I'm joking. I did want to end on something that was, you know, that summed up for me how it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that does. You are perfect, and all you have to do is breathe. I mean, there's a reason they call it nature's breath. It's not because you're breathing it; it's because it's breathing you. We are
we're at the end of our hour. Would you like to one more time give your contact information?
Thank you. Yes, I would. If you want to take a look at my book, you can find it on bookevolve.com, or you can get in touch with me on markabadi.com. I'm available. All my contact stuff is on there anyway. So you just Google Mark Abadi. Oh, I also have these YouTube moments. I don't know. Not sure if you've seen them, Susan, but they're called Mark's Moments. And when people ask me questions about different topics, such as, I know, anger and loss and ghosts and different things, I create these 2-3 minute little videos, and I put them on YouTube for people to have a little sort of quick bite answer to. So search me on YouTube. I'm all over the place.
Great. Well,
it's been such a pleasure, Susan. Thank you so much.
Oh, yes. Yes. Well, thank you for joining us. It's been great. We've been interviewing Mark Abadi, the author of Evolve, a very different kind of self-help book, one that is not only very, I guess we'd say, holistic, but addresses everything from the physical to the emotional, mental, and then, of course, on into the energy body and into the spiritual. And that's probably the best kind of self-help book that's ever been written. Thanks a lot, Mark, for joining us.
Thank you, Susan.
This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Next week, we will be interviewing Lisbeth Holtman in The Power of the Voice. And on the 17th, Dr. Friedman Schraub, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, A Breakthrough Process for Healing and Empowerment with Your Subconscious Mind. Thank you very much for joining us, and join us next week.